This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and tonight I'm joined by Angela Dugan, Principal Consultant at Polaris Solutions, joining me from Chicago. Thank you very much, Angela, for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So to start off, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So as you mentioned, Angela Dugan from Polaris Solutions. I'm actually based in Chicago, so I'm out here in the Midwest. I've been in IT for, oh my gosh, the math should be easy, about 18 years now. Wow, that's crazy. So I started off as a software consultant building apps. I did that for probably about 10 years or so. I spent about 5.5 years or so at Microsoft. And then I left Microsoft and joined Polaris Solutions, which is another software consultancy firm based here in Chicago. But then we also have offices in St. Louis and Denver. And actually changed my focus a bit over the years. Now, instead of focusing on the actual coding of software, I'm actually more of a agile coach and trainer. From a tools perspective, I tend to focus on team foundation servers, so doing implementations and training and customizations and things like that.
You do VSTS online as well?
I do. Yeah, honestly, for my personal use, I pretty much exclusively use VSTS. I don't want to have to maintain a server myself. So I do that for clients, but for my own purposes, it's just easier to use cloud services.
But tonight, that's not what we're going to talk about. You have been reading up on, presenting, talking about a thing called imposter syndrome. So just to get started, what is imposter syndrome?
Yeah, imposter syndrome. So yeah, it's an interesting thing because I've been speaking at conferences for a while. I actually started doing it, of course, as a Microsoft. I worked in the evangelism group, and so I did a lot of public speaking. And you learn to get over your fear of speaking pretty quick when you're doing it that often. And one of the things that I definitely had struggled with was just always this feeling of, like, no matter how much I prepared, like, I just wasn't going to do a good enough job, right? Like I wasn't gonna hit whatever marks that I had in my head that I thought I needed to hit. And the funny thing was, I had no idea what it was, right? Like I didn't know there was a name for it. And so at the time I worked at Microsoft, I happened to overlap with Scott Hanselman a little bit. I'm sure some of your listeners have heard of him. You may have even been on your podcast. But he wrote a great blog post. I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was called "I'm a Phony, you know, Are You?" or something like that. And I just remember reading it. And, you know, if there's anyone who's listening who doesn't know Scott Hanselman, he's also got an amazing podcast and a really great blog. And he's kind of like a tech rock star, kind of, right? Like he's funny and smart, and he has this stage presence that's just amazing. And he wrote this post about being a phony, and I'm like, what on earth are you talking about? Like, how is this even possible? And as I'm reading through this post, he said, you know, he went through a similar experience talking to somebody, and they said, hey, I work at Microsoft. Clearly, you know, I'm a pretty smart person, but I just never quite feel like I can, you know, get my shit together, and I always feel like I'm just not doing a good enough job. And then he said it, right? Like, it's, you have imposter syndrome, and he had it too. And it was interesting how, like, once I could put a name on it, it felt like something I needed to talk about. Cause I'm like, dude, it can't just be me, right? I can't be the only person in the Midwest who struggles with this. So that was probably a long answer to your question.
There's also some stuff about it that it tends to affect certain people a little bit more. I think the studies have shown women are more affected than men.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was interesting. So like, I'm a technologist. My background is computer science. That's what I went to school for. I am not a psychologist by any means. But I started digging a little more into the psychology once I realized it had a name. Because I figured with a name like imposter syndrome, like there had to be studies on it and papers on it. And so I was reading, you know, some more official studies. Some of it was, you know, like Wikipedia, which is what we do. And, you know, one thing that I saw pretty consistently was that, you know, it tends to certainly affect people in like STEM types of careers. So people who do technology things where you're constantly having to learn and kind of stay cutting edge. But even within that group, they found that the occurrences were much were much higher in high achieving women, which I was like, great, it's like a double whammy. So I'm in IT and I'm a woman. And it was pretty startling. They said that in general, when they send out surveys and kind of study folks, that at least 70% of the general population experiences imposter syndrome to some degree in their life. Some people obviously are going to be, you know, affected by it much more than others.
When you say high achieving, what does that mean?
Well, so high achieving, and honestly, like I didn't do a ton of research down exactly how they define that. But I guess the way that I see that is when you think about the people who are like, I'm an ALM MVP with Microsoft, right? Which means I do a lot of talks. I write a lot of blog posts. You know, I contribute to MSDN forums. Like I give feedback to the product team. So people who are always looking to kind of go above and beyond, like doing as much as they can to excel at what they do. So some people would kind of label that a perfectionist, maybe. You know, type A is another label that gets thrown on people who tend to be kind of high achieving. But generally, it just means that they're ones who are always working super, super hard and striving for something, right? Striving for something that maybe the average folks don't necessarily spend as much time on.
I think there's also an element that the more you know about something, the more you often realize you don't know everything, or even you get to realize you think you know, let's say 50%. But as you get towards that, you realize, you know, only 30 or 40 or 10 or 12 or whatever it happens to be, that the more you know about something, the more you realize you don't know.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I remember, I think I've given us a few variations of the talk, and in one of them, I quote Neil deGrasse Tyson, where he talks about how like the universe is just constantly expanding. And every time we think we know what the bounds are, it moves a little. And I feel like technology and a lot of fields are like this. I don't mean to imply that it's only technology, but I mean, if you think about how fast paced technology is, right? Like the phones that we carry around are updating every single day with new applications. You know, I tend to focus in the Microsoft space, but this is certainly true everywhere. You know, even with VSTS and Team Foundation Server, like VSTS gets updated every 3 weeks. So every 3 weeks, there's new functionality, new capabilities that are being pushed out that, you know, I guess I get a little more insight than the average person because of the programs that I'm in. But like, it's so hard to keep up. Every time you feel like, I am totally an expert, I know everything that I need to know about this, like you blink, right, for, you know, a minute, and you're like, oh my gosh, what is that new thing that I don't know yet? It can be kind of daunting.
Do you think part of the problem, though, is that the expectation is always there that this term expert, or, you know, in your case, MVP, there's an assumption that, well, you must know more than me, which you no doubt do, but that you must know more than other people who do the same kind of role as you.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And I know it used to be, I feel like it used to be kind of a badge of honor when someone would be like, oh, hey, we're bringing Angela with us. She's the TFS expert. And I was always like, yeah, that's awesome. You know, I feel like it's a little badge of honor. Whereas as now, like, I almost feel like it makes me more anxious when people come in and say, oh, we're bringing in Angela. She's the expert in, you know, whatever thing they're bringing me in to talk about. I almost have this fear that like there's this unrealistic expectation that I literally am Wikipedia. Like no matter what you ask me, it's literally just like in a file folder somewhere that I can pull out. And sometimes I definitely, you know, I have to talk myself down because it's not always other people's expectations. Part of imposter syndrome, at least the way that I feel it, is that is absolutely an expectation I put on myself. So I kind of have to give myself that reality check once in a while that, okay, the only person who really expects you to know everything is you. Like most of the people in this room are completely reasonable people who would be totally fine with you saying, you know what, I don't know, but I can totally get back to you with the answer.
I remember reading a book by Richard Branson. And his attitude to these kind of things was, if you don't know something, say you do and learn it on the job, because, well, you'll be able to in most cases. And you'll probably go in knowing more than the people who've hired you anyway.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those pieces of advice that feels kind of like the whole fake it till you make it thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, pretend you know because you'll get there. I personally don't prescribe to that. It works great for
Sure.
some people. Like, my husband would probably joke that like that's totally something that he could pull off. Me personally, I cannot do that. Like, I have no poker face. I don't have the ability to be like, yes, I totally know that. And in my head, I'm like, no, I don't know that at all. Like, I think I could probably frame it in a way that I was comfortable in saying that, you know what, I'm not familiar with that exact thing, but I've done enough similar things that I'm confident I could absolutely get it done, and that I can be confident in. And so I feel like really what people are looking for, you know, it, being a consultant, we just kind of are expected to learn and know everything. I think if you have the confidence to say, you know what, I can totally figure it out. I have the resources. I know how to figure out the problem. That's generally enough to now make me comfortable. But I'll admit I wasn't always comfortable with that. There was a time when I would have said, I totally know the answer, and then I would have stayed up till midnight, 2, 3 a.m. trying to figure it out before I had to be there, which is not sustainable, right? Like, you can do that in short spurts, but it's something that over time can really kind of wear you down, which is kind of the extreme end of imposter syndrome, right?
But there is a culture, I think, in general, outside of, let's say, what we're talking about, of when someone asks you a question, the expectation is that you'll have the answer. I mean, have you ever watched something like, CNBC or one of the financial channels going, oh, why did the stock market go down today? And they'll come up with some nonsense in the morning as to why it's down. And then when it rebounds in the afternoon, that reason is completely forgotten, but they had to have an answer. Do you think that's the same way with us in IT, that the expectation is from other people who don't know as much as us, expect us to know all the time?
Oh, absolutely. It's funny how, so that often comes up when I do any kind of agile training or coaching, because what you usually find is, you know, you get brought into an organization that you're not familiar with, and you hear a lot of the same kind of themes as to what people struggle with. And we often hear that there's not trust between the business and IT. And sometimes it's because the business will come to IT and say, hey, we'd really love if you could give us this thing. You know, it seems easy. Can you get this done? And IT just shakes their head like, yeah, we can totally get that done. Even though in the back of their head, they're probably thinking like, well, I'll sandbag on the estimates. I know there's going to be some complexity, but we'll figure it out. And then inevitably, you know, if something is late or if something is wrong, like, people have to scramble to figure it out. And, you know, one of the things that I have kind of started coaching people to do is stop lying to people, right? Stop telling them that stuff is easier, that you know the answer. Be super honest. Like, you know what? I don't know. Maybe go a little into the complexity. I mean, you don't want to kind of word vomit technology all over business folks and then have them just be like, I don't know what you're saying, and walk away in frustration. But helping them understand the complexity enough that they can walk away feeling comfortable with, you know, I don't know, but here's what I can give you. Give me a little bit more time to figure it out. Most people are super reasonable, but excuse me, super reasonable. But I think to some extent, like, we spent a lot of time, and when I say we, I mean kind of collective IT, we spent a lot of time kind of training them that, you know, yeah, you give us requirements and we bang on a keyboard and magic happens. And we never really told them how the sausage was made. And then you find yourself constantly having to live up to those expectations, right? So if I could do that last impossible thing you asked for, and I never told you that it was actually harder and more complex, then the next time you'll ask me for something even harder, and I'll feel like I have to do that thing too. And certainly part of imposter syndrome, like, one of the things that often manifests itself is you're constantly striving to do more, but then you feel like, well, crap, next time I just have to do more and more and more. Like, you can never give yourself a break. And so that can be kind of a vicious cycle.
To change kind of topic slightly, but do you see things like agile and sprints where there's an expectation of something every 2 weeks that you'll have a deliverable, that you've got an estimate of the time or a forecast or whatever it is feeding into this?
I mean, I'm loath to say to imply in any way that Agile would cause it. I think really it's not the framework of having to deliver something every 2 weeks. I think what really could could move into it is that, you know, people adopt the framework, but they don't really think about the mindset that has to accompany it, right? Like there has to be a mindset of acceptance and openness and trust and honesty, so that if you go into a sprint and they're like, hey, we can literally give you like one thing this sprint, that no one is pushing back and saying, well, that's unacceptable. You have to find a way to give us more, because that's what feeds into situations where people feel all this extra pressure. But that's not a problem you can solve overnight, right? The whole kind of trust and honesty thing, that takes a lot of time and a lot of practice to get good at.
I'll come back to imposter syndrome now. You did a non-scientific survey. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Absolutely. So when I was researching imposter syndrome, one of the things, of course, that I came across was an internet survey. And everyone knows internet surveys are super, super scientific. So I Googled the survey, and I don't know if you do like notes for your podcast. You can certainly share the notes. So one of the things I did was I found a survey that actually, it did come from a college of psychology that was doing a legit study.
Very reputable. I'm impressed.
Right. Super reputable. So I took the quiz, and it had a lot of questions, right? So some of the questions were things like, you know, you had to agree strongly or disagree strongly, and there was a spectrum. And it was things like, you know, I rarely do a task as well as I'd like to. Well, that felt like, well, that's probably a lot of people. There was another one that hit home a little bit more for me, which was, I'm afraid that people who are important to me will find out I'm not as capable as they think. That's a big one, right? Because that has as much to do with kind of other people's perceptions and how you internalize them. There was a statement that actually I kind of referred to, which is, sometimes I feel that success in my life or my job has been the result of some kind of error. Like, I'm not sure why I'm here or how I got here. Grave mistake. There were certainly times when I worked at Microsoft that I felt that way. Like, wait, why did they hire me? So you took the survey, and essentially it graded you on a scale. And so what I did was I took it for myself, and I got my own score, and it was pretty high, and high is not necessarily good in this case, right? And I was like, huh, you know, I wonder how my friends stack up. And this was before I had ever really given the talk. So I put a call out on Twitter, and I put a call out on Facebook, and I was like, hey, friends, people I don't know who follow me, like, would you be willing to take this quiz, send me back your role, what you do for a living, and what your score was? And I'm not going to publish your name. I just kind of want to gather the statistics. And it was really interesting. Like, first of all, I was shocked at how many people were willing to give me their results, probably because I wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I was divulging people's names. But I got the results back, and some of them were super surprising. So, for instance, you know, there are other people who are in my field who do what I do. And I see them up on stage and presenting and blogging, and I think, oh my God, like they totally have their shit together. Like, they are amazing. They are super confident. And then they scored way higher than me. Like, their imposter syndrome was off the charts. To the point where I'm looking at the score, like, how do they function? Like, that's crazy. And then, you know, but there was a good mixture, right? There were also people who, you know, it was a lot lower. They were much more comfortable with being uncomfortable. They were more comfortable saying they didn't know. And it kind of ran the spectrum. You know, I did have some high numbers in IT. I also had some pretty low numbers in IT. I think my highest score was actually a friend of mine who's a lawyer. That surprised me quite a bit, because I feel like lawyers' jobs are to get in front of people and like exude utmost confidence in everything they're saying. So to hear that a lawyer had imposter syndrome was a pretty big reality check for me.
There is another thing out there called the Dunning-Kruger. Can you explain that one, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure. So Dunning-Kruger is kind of the polar opposite of imposter syndrome. So with imposter syndrome, right, you kind of feel like everybody knows more than you, everybody's better than you, you can't add up. Whereas Dunning-Kruger is kind of the opposite, in the sense that, like, you don't know how much you don't know, and so you think you know everything. And the way I like to describe it is, I totally have imposter syndrome now, right? I'm like, I'm going to be 43, like, next week. Totally have imposter syndrome. I've been in IT for a while. I realize that there's so much stuff that I just don't know. I totally had Dunning-Kruger when I got out of college. Man, I had a master's in computer science. I'm like, I'm so smart. I know everything. You know, they'd send me out to a consulting gig to like write some classic, you know, VB6 and COM. And I just thought I had it all, right? I'm so smart, nobody can tell me anything. And it's funny because it's literally like the older I got, the more I learned, the more exposure I got to other people, the more I realized, like, man, like I know such a small sliver of what's actually out there, and it can be super humbling.
There was, or there is a friend of mine who will remain unidentified and unnamed. Not a good programmer, unfortunately, but I remember discussing this Scott Hanselman thing with him. He's going, no, I've never felt that about myself. But if you looked at his code, you know, aside from terrible misspellings, inconsistent naming, bad code, terrible use of interfaces, you know, pretty much all the basics were wrong, he still felt he was a great programmer. And you know, I wasn't going to burst the bubble. I wasn't going to do anything like that. But it was just so strange sitting opposite him. And I knew far more, but he felt that he knew far more.
Yeah, that's a tough one too, because you can't, how do you explain to someone that they don't know what they don't know, right? That's a tough one. But I feel like we all push through that. At least that's the hope, right? We come out of college thinking that we know everything. And I feel like even most kids, like I always thought I knew more than my parents. And
They
you
probably
know,
did.
now I think about one of my parents. Yeah, they probably are like they were tearing their hair out at me when they were my age, like, because I just thought I knew it all.
What, if this, let's say, people are listening to this podcast and they're kind of going, oh yeah, I know what Angela is talking about. Oh, maybe I've got imposter syndrome. What can they do?
Yeah, so the what can you do about it is interesting because I feel like sometimes people expect me to come with like a solution, right? Like some kind of cure or some kind of therapy that you can do and poof, it's gone, right? I don't know that imposter syndrome is anything that you could really ever eliminate from your life. And to some extent, like I don't think I'd want to, right? And let me explain that because that may sound a little weird. So I feel like when it comes to imposter syndrome, like if you get to a point where you're like, you know, you say you take the quiz and you're like, holy crap, like I scored really high. Now I understand why I feel the way I do. Like, what do I do now? Like, what I say is like, just recognize that that's what's happening, right? Just be like, okay, so I'm not a failure. I'm not, you know, I'm not a disappointment. I just have this thing, right? I've got this feeling in my head, right? And then don't beat yourself up about it, right? Because it's not necessarily a bad thing. I feel like there are ways to look at it and actually see it as a positive. So obviously not the extreme ends where, you know, like me having a panic attack one time at 3 o'clock in the morning about an upcoming presentation. That's for real. You know, but kind of embracing it and going, you know what? If I go with it, at least within reason, it'll push me to do a little bit more research. It'll push me to go, is there really something important that I'm not kind of digging into, so that I'm at least prepared to say, I don't know, but I'm aware of that, right? So I feel like it can push you to kind of the boundaries of where other people might just stop even looking into something. So that's not necessarily a bad thing. I feel like it also kind of fosters you to experiment with things and maybe try things that you wouldn't otherwise. And so, you know, I kind of couple that with, again, kind of going back to the agile coaching thing. Part of what we talk about in agile is you have to be willing to try things, right? It's not about walking in and always knowing exactly what you're going to do and how long everything is going to take. Sometimes you have to be willing to say, you know what, I don't know what the right solution is, and rather than spend a long time going down the wrong path, let me spend a very short amount of time. I'll experiment with a couple of things, throw it back to you, and you can tell me what you think. But that can be scary, right? Because there's the risk that you're going to do the wrong thing. And right, again, if you kind of let your brain kind of go off the rails with imposter syndrome, you can almost freeze up and go, well, God, what if I do the wrong thing? What's going to happen if I do the wrong thing? And so there has to be a little permission to yourself to like try something and fail and know that it's okay, right? You're not going to lose your job. It's not going to be the end of the world, right? If you just make these little, you know, these little risks that people are aware of and let them take those chances with you. But that can be a really hard thing because there's just an innate fear of failure.
One of the things in your presentations, you say that people should find something that they're not particularly good at and become much, much better at that.
Yeah, and kind of the next step to that too is to teach someone else to do it, right? Because I feel like finding something you're not good at and learning it, that's good, right? So you're certainly like teaching yourself that, hey, I can go into something I'm not comfortable with and I can be okay at it, right? Which is a good confidence booster. It can certainly get you going. But something that has helped me, right? These aren't one size fits all solutions, but is learning something well enough to teach somebody else, right? Because I feel like me, you know, learning something is great, but then watching somebody else learn from you can sometimes really, really kind of let it sink in that, like, I have things of value, right? I can actually learn things and give it to others. And then you feel a little less like everybody knows more than you, right? I feel like that kind of bursts that little bubble that we build in our head of what could I possibly have to offer? Doesn't everyone else know more than me? Well, if I learn something new and teach it to someone else, I've just proven like, hey, like it's okay if I don't know everything because they didn't know that thing and I didn't think any less of them for not knowing that thing. It's almost like teaching yourself by example.
I think another thing is that if you don't know something or if you make mistakes, it's not necessarily a big deal. I remember after posting one podcast, the guest on it wrote to me to say I had a few typos and a few grammatical errors in my notes. Fine, no big deal. I told this to a colleague of mine and he was responsible. Oh, if that happened to me, Brian, I'd be so embarrassed. I said, no, I made typos and I made spelling mistakes. Not a big deal. Now, having said that, I put a significant amount of effort into making sure the audio is good, the recording is good, everything is good, but mistakes happen.
Oh yeah, and you hit it right on the head there, which is that we also have to be examples to others, right? Like I've gotten to a point in my life where now I'm no longer terrified that people will find out the things I've done wrong. I've actually gotten to where if I screw something up, I'll just blog about it and I'll be like, listen, here's this really dumb thing that I did. It caused all these problems, but I fixed them. And now here you can read this and hopefully now you will never make that mistake. And once I looked at it as an opportunity to help others, like I look for opportunities to screw up and help other people. I feel like that's often the best way to learn, right? Like doing something right the first time, you don't learn nearly as much as if you really screw that up and have to figure it out. I feel like that's how you become an expert anyway, right? For a while, people were like, oh, she's the TFS expert. Like she can do all kinds of implementations. And, you know, especially back before TFS was super easy to install, it used to be a heck of a lot harder. But part of the reason I was so good at it is because I had screwed things up, right? You had missed firewalls or configured servers wrong, or you forgot to flip that switch in SQL Server, but then you don't do it again, right? So people who are quote unquote experts, they've just screwed up on you. That's really the difference.
Have you retaken that survey since starting to present on imposter syndrome?
You know, I have not. And it's interesting that you bring it up because I think the first time I ever gave that talk, I want to say was 2 years ago at that conference. So it's been probably 2.5 years since I took the quiz. So and now that you said that, I think I'm going to take a note and take the quiz again because it would be interesting to see if it's changed at all.
It would. And if you don't mind, if you can let me know what your score is, I'll add it to the notes for the
Absolutely.
podcast.
Yeah, no, maybe I can I don't know if I can get to it tonight, but I'll
No,
get to
no,
it as
no.
soon as I
That's
can because
absolutely fine because
now
it'd be
you've
a
got me
summer of
interested.
weeks.
Yeah, now you've got me interested.
But just so people know, I think you said it was 77 was your score some years ago.
It was 77. Yeah, and that wasn't quite like the top tier of suffering from imposter syndrome, but it was right on the outer edges. It was like on if A was like the highest level of imposter syndrome, it was like an A minus. So we'll see if I've
Oh.
gotten that score down to a B or a B minus maybe.
I think it's getting a little bit late, Angela. Any final notes before we wrap up for the evening?
I mean, honestly, I think the big notes are, you know, imposter syndrome is not necessarily something you have all the time. It can come and go throughout your life. And I think one of the things I've started doing is so when I first started giving the talk, it was all about yourself, right? Recognizing it in yourself and how can you address it in your own life. And one of the things I've actually started to morph the talk into a bit is starting to recognize it in others, because, you know, again, kind of going back to the coaching thing, whether you're doing Agile or not, right, it doesn't matter. If you've got a team of people and you're trying to work together, it's super important that you're communicating and that people understand what you're struggling with and what the status is of things. But if you have someone on the team who's afraid of failure, they're afraid of looking like they're not smart enough or they're not experienced enough in front of the team, that can really be a problem. And so recognizing that in others and seeing that someone else is clearly struggling with kind of asking for help or admitting when they're struggling with something and figuring out ways to make them feel safe, to make them feel comfortable, like opening up and sharing that, whether it's just with you or whether it's with the whole team, that can be a really big deal too. So like certainly focus on yourself first, but then once you feel like you're starting to get more comfortable, like start looking around, because if 70% of people are experiencing it at some point, there's a good chance that most of the people on your team are feeling that way too and just aren't admitting to it.
Great advice. Angela Dugan, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian.
The opening music was A Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Waves by Ala Nerio from the album The Code of Flowers.